Thanks for joining A&M Conversation With, a podcast series featuring Alvarez and Marsal leaders discussing the trends impacting businesses today.
On this episode of A&M Conversation With, Managing Director Dr. David Gruber sits down with Director Dr. Francis Lamorte, both from our healthcare industry group, to discuss sustainable physician behavior change and what will the future hold for primary care physicians.
It has been reported that physician morale, engagement, and productivity has declined during the past few years, particularly for the older physicians over the age of 40. What are your thoughts there?
Well, there's been a lot of factors in the profession that have changed, and especially for those physicians that are 40 to 45 years old. But we know that technology has brought a lot of changes, but the economy, work conditions, and technology not necessarily related to EMR have also made an impact on physician practices, as have regulatory changes.
And could you give us a few more specifics in that regard? What are the major changes that have occurred?
Well, for years ago, a doctor had an equity value in his practice, as an example. And one of the first forces of dissatisfaction I saw in my career was those physicians, often primary care physicians, that had a patient panel that had an economic value. They had equity in their practice. And as payers and networks kind of took control of the patient list, they lost the value in their practice. Further along the spectrum of time, over time, the physician compensation in some specialties has also declined. The work environment's gotten harder. The regulations around the residency programs, which improve the conditions for residents, necessarily reduce the value of the apprentice for their mentors. Residents do less of the lifting than their prior generation did. Accordingly, the move toward 24/7 operations is seen as a dire need in healthcare. Weekend pauses are costly, but it's going to be physicians that have to take up the burden of working nights and weekends, and that'll be another dissatisfier. No golf on Wednesdays any longer, David. I would say, in terms of technology, while it's improved some things for physicians, the science has gotten more difficult. Older physicians didn't have the training in genetics and biochemistry. The fields barely existed compared to what they are now. We'll talk about EMR technology and how that's actually added to the burden of work for the doctors, as well as complexity. And lastly, the physicians today get less professional esteem and respect than their prior generations. We know the term provider now is almost mandatory rather than physicians. And that do-it-yourself generation, self-directed consumerism, directly brings patients that are not nearly as educated as they need to be in healthcare to directly challenge physician decisions. And lastly, I'll just say that despite all this, the responsibility and the risk really hasn't changed. A patient that discharged from an office, hospital, or an emergency department and goes on to have a related adverse event, well, that conversation the next day still starts the same way it did 40 years ago, David. It becomes not our patient, but your patient, Dr. Gruber, that you remember the patient you saw yesterday, Mr. Jones. And so that malpractice risk and that responsibility really hasn't been altered in any significant way. And I think the confluence of all these factors has led to a significant decline in physician satisfaction with their profession and practice environment.
And the data suggests that there has also been a decline in productivity. Would you agree with that?
Yes, that's clearly evident. And I think one of the large factors with that, well, there's a couple. The advent of the electronic medical record has certainly added to the doctor's workload. You have to remember, for the older physicians, the fact that I like to think it's kind of ironic, but in my generation, if you were profession bound, either as a lawyer or a physician, you likely took Latin in high school and not typing. And now you fast forward 40 years later, and doctors in my generation can't type, right? And so it's difficult, and no one really thinks of simple things like that that really add to the time and burden and patient care. I think additionally, there's the use of electronic medical records has led physicians to become more of a inventory and stock keeper. So while the EMR leveraged their time in some ways, it just like barcoding, when they came to supermarkets, people expected the clerks to be off the register and to get through the line more quickly. But over time, we noticed that the cash register people that were replaced by barcode scanners had more responsibilities. In a sense, they were taking stock and inventory for the store. And so in a like manner, a lot of the record keeping that physicians do now is taking stock and inventory of information that doesn't really help them make decisions or take care of patients, but rather provides some required workload for revenue cycle management for a hospital, for payers, and for government data keeping.
Yeah, so it sounds like, in summary, more work for less pay with lower satisfaction. Many hospitals and health systems have acquired physician practices. You know, how have these acquisitions fared in primary care and elsewhere? Are they adding to quality?
Well, there was a race to capture share among hospitals, and usually in any overbought market, a lot of the acquisitions don't prove to be advantageous. And I think that also came true with the hospital acquisition of physician practices over the last several years. A lot of the synergies weren't realized, mostly in primary care. I think, just as I talked about, the payers and narrow networks kind of successfully competed away or stripped the physician practices of their patient panels. The specialists, I think acquisition of specialist practices did better for hospitals and networks, but that depends on the type and technology of the specialty involved and the skill in hospitals in selecting the acquired physician practices. So as an example, one client I had was a hospital that purchased 3 cardiology practices, but interestingly, or rather unfortunately, only one of those practices really had a proceduralist. And so needless to say, they ended up, 2 of the practices were really legacy cardiology type practices that had low productivity, low contribution margin, and over time turned out to be costly and an ineffective acquisition for the hospital. I'd say lastly, the hospitals do not do well managing physician practices. So sometimes the synergies of the acquisitions don't pan out, not because the physicians fail to be productive, but there's a change in physician practices that are acquired by hospitals. So the hospitals typically run the physician practices using their personnel that are more experienced with high value, low volume of cases. And when they acquire a physician practice, that situation is reversed, especially in primary care. Now they're acquiring practices that are high volume but low value, and they let a lot of things fall through the cracks, if you will. The revenue cycle management process for a physician practice is exceedingly different from that of a hospital-based. Billing and coding is different. The hospitals manage co-pays less effectively than a physician practice, and oftentimes the physician environment is different. The physician may have acquired a practice that didn't take Medicare or Medicaid patients. And then when that practice is moved into the hospital's marketplace, they necessarily have to see Medicare and Medicaid patients, and the doctors may not be that enthusiastic or actually that capable. Different age group, different types of problems. And so they see different amounts of productivity from what they estimated at the time of the acquisition.
So we're in the era of hospital-centric care delivery. And by hospital-centric, it's really hospital and health system-centric care delivery. But when you look at the most successful providers over time, when you look at Kaiser, and when you look at the Mayo Clinic, and you look at Geisinger and a bunch of others, they've all been physician-led. Is there an excess today of administrative, non-physician influence in care delivery that's affecting both quality as well as cost?
So the answer to that question, I think, lies in the way that the final organization is arranged. And I am a firm believer in a dyadic or a dyad type of leadership where there's a physician-led and someone business experience to support them. And then you'll typically, physicians have some leadership skills, but in school, they're not really taught how to lead in a business environment. It's a more competitive kind of a single combat warrior. And that hasn't changed much, where a business environment is more collaborative and associative in nature. And so you kind of need the best of both to bring them together for a successful organization.
So what do you see? You know, a number of administrators and payers talk about the role of nurse practitioners, talk about physician assistants, talk about practice to one's license. Could you comment on all that? And is there potential for having folks who are really not qualified to treat patients with complex conditions to save money. And at the end of the day, the total cost of care would rise.
So that's interesting. I think at this point, the role of nurse practitioners and physicians assistants has been played out. In other words, I think this benefit has been realized. There's probably not going to be much of an extension for their use for providing further solutions and reducing costs or improving quality. In smaller environments and hospitals, they're probably underutilized, but for the large part, I think their role's been established. It's valuable, but like I said, I think it's played out. I think the hospitalist model is also stabilizing. Thinking going forward, there's probably three factors that are going to extend physician leverage and make up for the shortage in primary care physicians that maybe hasn't been realized yet and isn't always well recognized in the popular media. I think technology may continue to disintermediate the physician role, especially in primary care, as the gatekeeper or initial provider. I think social media has done that already. Telehealth has significant unrealized potential. The payment model for that varies by state and is not well understood, but over time, I think there's a significant role that it will play in reducing costs and in leveraging primary care physicians. And robotics is probably another interesting area that will continue to leverage some physician types of specialties and reduce the costs of care.
So, and a final question. Given the aging population, given the life expectancy of those who reach age 65, given the presence of comorbidities, patient complexity, and the like, what is the role of the primary care physician in the future? Will it be more important, less important? And then what do hospital administrators, payers, and others have to do to ensure that we have an adequate supply of productive and motivated primary care physicians?
Well, I think the reasons we discussed that the role of primary care physicians is necessarily going to be reduced. The supply is not going to increase anytime soon. And will probably never be adequate for the purposes at which they're presently used. And so I think over time, the response of the industry is going to be to disintermediate them, to find alternatives for primary care. And I think as medicine gets more complex and technical, that it will be desegmented, in other words, parsed away to different specialists and to different types of support and different types of technologies. So I think we've seen that already. Traditionally, hospital was the doctor's workshop, and it was a place for problem solving. And with advent of certain technologies, I don't mean computer IT technology, but robotics and other things, specialists have managed to strip away from hospitals those procedures that are readily standardized and can be done, high margin, low variation in the procedure. And they move them out to outpatient units, leaving hospitals with less cases but highly complex ones, and still the ones that require kind of thought and cognitive skills. And that leaves the hospitals with a mixed business model because half their activity has to accommodate that kind of problem-solving workshop, and the other half of their institution still has to provide procedures and compete, standardize, reduce costs, and be able to do things in a more standardized and consistent way. So it's become more challenging for hospitalists. I think physician specialists are gaining more control economically, capturing some, in a sense, becoming capitalists. But left out of this scenario and my future expectations is the role of primary care.
So the belief then is healthcare is becoming transactional and there's a loss of humanity and the relationship is becoming less, not more important. And the patients tend to say the opposite.
They would, but, for healthcare to become more accessible and universal, and to take care of higher volumes of patients and people with more complex issues, I think those are just diverging needs. And I think in the end of the day, there's going to have to be an acceptance of a different way that healthcare will be rendered compared to the way it was in the past. I mean, just look at the way physicians interact with patients now and the electronic medical record. It's still awkward. Yeah, doctors are typed. Trying to look at patients, talk to them. They bring a cart in and they stand in a doorway in a room where the cart won't fit. They're typing, holding the door open, trying to be personal, but at the same time, trying to reduce the time burden spent on recording their medical record. And like I said, a lot of the information they don't need to do. And so I don't think that unless some advanced technology intervenes, like more accurate voice recognition, things like that, that might be able to replace the way things are currently done, I don't see that per trend toward personalization improving in the near future.
Frank, thank you very much. Lots of good insights, lots of good discussion, and thanks again.
You're welcome, Dave. It was a pleasure.
For our listeners, for more information, visit our homepage at alvarezandmarsal.com and connect with us on LinkedIn at Alvarez and Marsal.